Welcome back to the Essential Mooting Guide, the podcast, with me, your host, Travis Wallio, the chief coordinator at the wonderful people who make this program possible, the Moot Court Society at the Faculty of Law, Universitas Pajajaran. Today, I wanted to start with a cold open to just briefly let you guys know what we have prepared on this week's exciting episode. For the first time on the show, we've extended our guest list beyond our own university and reached out to two special guests from two of the top universities in the country with some of the best law schools and best mooting programs in Indonesia. Naturally, I don't want to reveal too much about our guest off the top, but our first one was the National Administrator at the Philip C. Jessup Indonesian Rounds earlier this year, while our second guest was the Director for the William Sifis National Pre-Moot in Indonesia earlier in March. He is currently working as a lawyer in Jakarta, but naturally, as well, we'll be hearing more about that later. So let's jump to our first guest immediately and hear all about what she has to say. And today we are here with our first of two special guests. We're here with the wonderful Josephine Budiana, who I'm going to let introduce herself in a moment. But obviously, you don't mind, right, Joy?
I don't mind.
A couple of honorable mentions, shall we say.
She was
the National Administrator for Jessup 2020 in Indonesia this year. And she's also currently the Director of PR and Publication at ISIL. And she's currently still studying, is that correct, at UPH?
That's right.
Obviously, welcome to the show, Joy.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I can be here.
You're actually a very special guest today because since we have not recorded with Bang Bio yet, you are the first non-UNPAD guest we've ever had on the show.
No way!
That's the first one that is correct. I'm sure people want to get to know you a little bit better, so why don't you go on ahead and introduce yourself for our audience.
All right, as Travis mentioned, I am a student at Universitas Pelita Harapan. I have been here for 4 years, getting a little old actually. I'm currently doing my thesis and recently was the National Administrator for the Indonesian National Rounds of the Jessup competition. And during my second year of university, I actually spent 3 months in Ginting and Reksa Diputro in association with Ellen and Overy, and I interned there. I guess that was an interesting experience
as
well.
Yeah, definitely. So kind of a little bit everywhere, right? So
yeah,
making moots
everywhere.
You're not only a host of mooting, you've also been a mootie yourself, right?
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I was a representative for the Willem Sivis International Commercial Arbitration Moot from UPH, and that was in the year 2018. It was this East, and I met the UNPAD team as well.
Could you tell us about what you do with ISIL? Obviously, because you are also here as a director of PR and publication from ISIL.
Okay.
I don't think we've properly talked about it before on the show. Could you tell us a little bit about what ISIL is, what it stands for, what it does?
ISIL is short for Indonesian Society of International Law. Basically, our main focus is the Jessup event. However, we do have workshops throughout the year in many different universities around Indonesia. At least we try to have about 6 workshops throughout the year, one in each area. So for example, sometimes we go to Bandung, sometimes we go to other cities such as Surabaya, Medan, basically other smaller cities. And probably the furthest we went was Riau. So we try and educate university students and also create awareness regarding the moot court competitions, because we did our own survey where we realized that most of the people that are working in the top tier law firms, fresh graduates that are working in the top tier law firms, are those that come out of university doing moot. So we are trying to give them the awareness that this will actually open up doors for you. Imagine graduating from a law school with 300 people each batch. 300 is small. How many people are graduates each year from
about 300, 400? Well, I don't know about graduate, but we take in about 300, 400.
That's particularly the law school, right? So yeah, about 300 to 400 students. And you can imagine the universities in the smaller cities. I'm not talking like Jakarta, Bandung, Surabaya. I'm talking like the even smaller ones such as like Solo, for example. You can imagine that each year there are 300 to 400 students graduating, and only one or two ends up in top tier law firms. And who are they? They are those who actually participated in a moot competition. So we're trying to give them, we're trying to feed them with statistics, you know, we're trying to tell them that, okay, so you can see from the evidence that we've collected that mooting does actually bring you places, you know?
Yeah, two questions in and you've already like basically told the entire message of this whole podcast.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's great. I mean, like, we've never had that kind of data. We never even knew that kind of data existed, but I'm personally very glad, and on behalf of my entire department, very glad that you can share that with us and hopefully inspire a couple of kids to try it out themselves, right?
I'm really hoping that through this podcast that you guys actually made, kids, especially first-year students, I'm guessing you're targeting towards like the first-year, second-year students who are still confused whether or not they want to spend their university like years mooting, or, you know, because mooting takes a lot of commitment. Of course, we know that.
And definitely.
I guess many kids don't really think about the benefits that come out of it. And so we want to try and create that awareness, you know. And I'm glad you guys are doing this podcast.
Thank you. Well, my next question feels kind of redundant, you having said all that. And it's, I want to ask about, like, what is the kind of way UPEHA as, and you as an UPEHA student, kind of look at moot court as a university? But I mean, from your answer just now, it seems like you, UPEHA, ISIL, all kind of see mooting as a very, very beneficial thing, obviously, right? So do you coach as well? Do you teach at UPEHA? Do you do anything like what I might be doing at UNPAD right now, or perhaps you did in the past?
Okay, so coaching, I have not really actually gone deep into it because the year after my VIS, UPEHA completely stopped having the VIS moot. So I was never coached.
I see.
So the year after I did my moot, I actually immediately entered into ISIL. I wasn't ISIL at first. I was the committee for the JASAP. So I have been more on the administrative side of the moot rather than actually a member of the moot. But I can speak for both sides, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's quite interesting as well, because we've never actually been able to speak either with anyone organizing a moot. And I know that you weren't only administrator this year, you were also head of one of the more important divisions.
Last year, as well. That's right. Last year, I was the head of participants and publication as well. So,
Right. Could you tell us a bit about why you chose to do it? Why you thought like, oh, I want to help organize a moot. I want to see what that's like.
I think in general, I am someone who enjoys investing in people. I would like to see people grow. I would like to see them actually make it in their own way. And so if I can actually open up doors for them, I would love to. It's part of like who I am as well, to be helpful to people, to be resourceful, to be someone who can actually help others grow in terms of their hard skills and their soft skills. Because I think mooting teaches you both hard skills and soft skills.
Could you tell us a little bit about the experience of hosting a moot court? I mean, it sounds stressful. I mean, being there in the dress up and then like running around after all the judges and, you know, all that.
I think what's most important is trusting the people who are in your committee. Because let's face it, one person can't do everything on their own. I had a committee of 65 people, and arranging between 65 people of different backgrounds, of different education, like
it was difficult.
Different universities, exactly. And for the first time this year, the national administrator wasn't from their home university.
Well, we're thankful either way that you took the time out and made it happen, because as one of the overseers and one of the coaches for JASAP, I particularly enjoyed the overall event this year.
Thank you.
Would not have happened
without your dedication and hard work, obviously.
And my team, of course.
Of course, of course. kudos to where kudos is due.
Thank you.
We kind of want to backtrack, though. We would like to ask you a little bit about your time as a delegate and what training is like. What is training like for an UPH Muti?
Okay, so I will speak of the general UPH ILMCC moot culture. Okay, is that fine with you?
All right, that's cool. Of course.
So basically, we have something called a base camp. We all live there for throughout the time of the moot. So, for example, the VIS moot started in October and lasts up till about like March, right? So throughout that time period, we are quote unquote locked under the same roof with all our teammates. And we usually start working at 4 in the afternoon because that's when we usually finish classes.
Right.
So at 4 in the afternoon, and minimum working hours is about 8 hours.
Right. But so kind of similar,
That's right. So as closer it is to the competition, of course, it increases from 8 hours to whenever, basically. So I guess it's about the same in UNPAD as well. And in our case, we usually have weekly meetings with the supervisor, which is basically a lecturer from the university. And aside from that, we have the seniors meeting.
So the meetings with the...
with the seniors who are also hands-on.
Former mutees, right?
That's right. That's right. So that's about once a week. But of course, the intensity grows as the time goes closer to the competition itself. When it's closer to the competition, we usually meet the seniors every single day. And we usually alternate between the number of seniors we have.
Right. Yeah. So it's about the same.
It's about the
probably
same.
Probably the only... the only difference is we're very situational with the kind of like living together. I've lived together with my teams on a number of occasions, but it's usually due to circumstance more than kind of like a culture. So to come back to the kind of like comparative culture study or whatever you want to call it, how do you guys usually finance your moots? Obviously to some extent it's personal costs. Do you guys ever look for like sponsorships or anything like that in terms of preparing for your moot? Mm-hmm. Because obviously you're traveling, right?
Yep.
I know that you guys, obviously Hong Kong in your year, and then Jessup
and Sweden.
Yeah, FDI. Sweet, right. And then I think you guys also did the World Trade Organization moot, right?
That's right. All the way to Geneva.
That's a very expensive moot.
Yep. That's right.
We were thinking about taking it this year, and then we found out how much it cost.
That's right. It's very expensive. Okay. A lot of people think that because we're UPH, we have like excessive amount of money we can spend. Okay?
Right.
But in reality, the university only covers our administration fee, not even like our hotels, not even our travel fee, nothing. It's just purely the administration fee. And which means we have to ask, well, we're students. So practically a lot of the times we still seek finance from our parents, right? Mm-hmm. And some of us do not have that capacity, you know? And when that happens, usually the team will look for sponsors. So it's about the same as you. They would go to law firms or whichever connection they have. Sometimes it may not be law firms. It may be individuals like, oh, my dad knows this person. My mom knows this person. My uncle knows this person.
Insanely rich.
So yeah, exactly. So it's usually you usually go to them and seek extra cash from them. But so it's not necessarily law firms in our case. But we are usually relatively transparent to the university who exactly sponsors us.
Right. You need to make the report and everything.
That's right.
Well, could I ask a different question on a different topic?
Sure, of course.
Obviously, you sound like a very driven person. And I think mooting and I guess a lot of legal work, especially when we're talking about, like, let's say, lawyering.
Mm-hmm.
It takes up a lot of your time and it requires a lot of, kind of working like a mule and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, when you look at you on social media, you seem like you have a great work-life balance. Could you talk a little bit about that? Is it true that you have maintain a good work-life balance, and how do you do so, if that's the case?
Well, honey, you sacrifice sleep.
Okay.
That's the answer. So
good answer.
So during the time I was working in Ginting, I could still go out on Friday nights because I would work my ass off in the morning all the way until practically like 11 o'clock. And then I leave the office at 11 o'clock and then I go do whatever I want to do, you know. And you sacrifice sleep during the weekdays, and on the weekends you catch up on it.
Right.
Basically, that's how I do it. And I think finding the right balance. Also, I find this really important. If you are tired, stop working, because your work will not be as good as if you were not tired.
So if I can kind of like sum that up, it's you do have to make sacrifices. And in your case, sleep. And kind of figuring out when to stack it up. And which
That's
is on
right.
the weekends for you.
That's right.
But also at the same time, just kind of knowing when to take care of yourself and when.
That's right.
Kind of, in the words of Stephen Covey, that kind of production cost, like taking care of paying the production costs and making sure that you maintain at an optimal level when you
That's
are tired.
That's right.
So when you're tired, take a break.
Exactly.
And kind of just finding a rhythm, right?
Exactly. Because I think if you work yourself too hard, like, if you work yourself too hard, it is not good for you. You're not going to produce good work. Your brain needs to breathe, you know?
Yeah, refresh itself once in a while.
Exactly.
We could have a whole episode on this, actually.
That's right.
Maybe we will one day. But
very
unfortunately, we are starting to run out of time. So I guess usually we have this thing where we give our guests the opportunity to say whatever they'd like to the audience. If you have any final remarks before I wrap up our conversation, do you have anything you want to say to the audience?
Moot. It looks hard. It sounds hard. But you will thank the moot later on in your life. Trust me on this.
And were you thankful for your year? Your
Definitely.
Civis 2018?
Definitely. Not only did I meet the friends that I have today, it's also the hard skills and soft skills, the writing, the structuring, the layering arguments, the research, exactly. And soft skills like communication to those above you and at your level, and listening, and most importantly, teamwork.
Definitely.
It teaches you a lot. So moot.
Definitely. Well, thank you, Joy, for joining us today. Tonight, actually. We're actually recording
Thank you so much. Thank you, Travis, for actually sparing your time to do this.
It's my job. Don't worry about it. So I guess that's that. We're going to cut to a break for this next part. And after this, we're going to be talking to actually someone you know, right, Joy? We're going to be talking to Bang Dio Ilham Oepangat from Universitas Indonesia. He's actually an alumni. But I'll let him introduce himself in a second. So, last time, Joy, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And we'll speak soon, yeah?
Speak soon, yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're back now with the Essential Mooting Guide, the podcast, and we are with our second special guest of the day, night. Well, we're kind of recording at night, right? So,
yeah.
Second one of the night is great. Also, a non-UNPAD guest and a little bit more special. He is an associate at Karimsyah Law Firm. He has been coaching at Universitas of Indonesia for the past 4 years. He is, if I'm not mistaken, a FIS ex-Muti. As well as the director of this year's National Pre-Moot for the Willem Sifis Moot in Indonesia. Would you like to introduce yourself, Bang Dio?
Hi. All right. First of all, thank you for having me, Travis, and the UNPAD Moot Card Society. Big pleasure
course,
for me.
Of course. Definitely.
As you have introduced, hi, my name is Dio, or at university I was called Ilham. You can call me either. That's fine. I'm an associate at Karimsyah Law Firm. My focus of practice is mainly in disputes. arbitration, though I also do criminal law, restructuring, and recently insurance. Well, yeah, that's about it from me. I've been mooting since high school. I have coached the Universitas Indonesia VIS team for 3 years in a row. That's a total of 4 years in total of coaching. I've coached mediation moots, the ICC moot in Singapore, as well as I've participated in WTO moot as well in 2017 in Seoul. And yeah, I guess that just summarizes.
Well, it's always great to have a seasoned mooty on the podcast, and it's especially, like I mentioned with Joy earlier, you're only the second non-UNPAD guest that we've ever had, and Joy was the first one earlier tonight. But obviously, like you mentioned, you're a active participant in the moot community even after you're working, right?
Yeah.
Like this year, you directed the pre-moot.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my first question is really, you're kind of our representative of Universitas Indonesia here, and you were batch 2015. So
mm-hmm.
could I ask you how you and UI as a university kind of look at mooting? Like, do you perceive it in the same way we do as a beneficial thing, kind of?
Of course. I mean, if you view it as a beneficial thing, if I didn't view it as a beneficial thing, then I wouldn't be here up until this point still coaching. So, what I think mooting in general is sort of a way to develop yourself twofold. Firstly, in terms of your knowledge of the law itself. And second of all, I think what's really important is also the social networking that comes out of a moot, you know? So the way we view moots is that we're a really big family. So at UI, it's ILIMS. International Law
mm-hmm,
Society.
Mm-hmm.
We're a really big family, and as well, the alumni are a very big family. Even though we are focused in different moots, like for example, I know my seniors in the VIS who actually did the VIS in 2010 and 2011. So it's a really big family. We like to view it as that, you know. For me personally, it's something that. It's a personal goal of mine to actually give back to the community, because the VIS community or the ILIMS community has given me so much in terms of my career and in terms of like family that, you know, I want people who come and moot to experience the same thing. And that's not just limited to the VIS. I guess for every moot, especially, of course, the Jessup moot as well, they have a very strong alumni base. And whenever you need help or whenever you want to hang out, you know, they're always there for in that respect. So I guess the way we view it is more of a family who tries to progress together rather than just viewing it as a competition, doing it and then bye, you know. So it's about long-term relationships with people. That's how I view it. And I guess that's how ILIMS views it as well.
That's a very interesting take on it, really. And we'd actually like to ask you more about like how you coach and how alumni perceive the organization. But before we get to that, do you think that in any way mooting has helped you beyond your time as a mootie, especially now that you're working at an associate at Karim Shah Law Firm?
Yeah, sure. So to be frank, I got to know the law firm that I'm working at, Karim Shah Law Firm, because I used to practice at Karim Shah Law Firm with Karen Mills. Karen Mills is the foreign counsel at Karim Shah, and she did a lot of investment arbitration and now more commercial arbitration. And she coached our team. She coaches every year, not just UI, but she also coaches UNPAD, UGM. And after I finished my practice, I just we kept in contact, and after that, I interned there for 2 months, and after that, I started there as an associate. So the whole connection of it is that I got into the firm mainly because I did the VIS. It's about connections that you can build up, connections that actually can build up your career. So working together with because not everybody is in the lawyering sector at the end of the VIS or at the end of college. So it's really good to have, you know, all of these people around in different sectors. And if you need something or if you need, if you have like this beneficial collaboration between the different sectors, like between your sector as a lawyer and, for example, someone who's in the technology sector or in the startup sector, there's always room for collaboration. You always have your foot in the door, so to speak. So I guess in that way, this doesn't only influence like the actual knowledge that you get. For example, oh yeah, gue ikut FIS, gue ngerti arbitras. It's not like that. It's not merely just like that. Yes, you do understand arbitration, but I guess the big picture of it is the professional and personal connections that you build with people. So that's my take.
So in a big way, it goes back to that really kind of big family kind of network that you were talking about earlier, right?
Yes.
Could I ask you about how that kind of plays into your quote-unquote mooting culture at your university?
Yeah.
Especially in regards to like how does the coaching system work? The way we do it obviously is whoever did the moot latest or the year before, they have a kind of quote-unquote moral obligation to come back and then help the new team. Is it the same at your university?
That's a very good question, actually, because we don't, I can only speak for this, but we don't actually have a fixed system in which, you know, this is the guy next in line for coaching. So it's usually the alumni have a group, and 2 months prior to the internal selection, somebody will ask, all right, so who's going to coach this year? And usually there, up until this point, there's always been somebody who said, you know what, I'm going to coach. We haven't had a situation where we actually have to look for somebody to coach. And with regards to the coaching style itself, it really depends on the team, I would say. For me personally, if the team is more relaxed, then I need to be a little bit more disciplined. If the team is disciplined, then I can be a little bit more relaxed. So it's like a give or take situation.
Right.
So you know, if the output is good, if they achieve all their tasks by when they were actually supposed to, then of course they can have more free time. For example, with this year's team, the 27th VIS, the one who just participated at the online rounds at the VIS, I was very relaxed in a sense because they were very disciplined. They started practice on time. They, there is no slouching or anything. But, you know, it really depends from character to character of the team members. Like as a coach, you need to be flexible in adapting your coaching style toward these kids so they actually do better. If you apply like a bad cop, for example, attitude to all the kids equally, then I don't think it would be optimal.
You're gonna get the same returns, right?
Exactly.
I'm kind of curious though. So I'm kind of intrigued in the way that your system works, and like it's very voluntary, and I think that's very good, especially because when you volunteer, then that person can be held accountable. But in terms of ILMS, like how does ILMS come into that process? Do they participate in that process in it? Or is like, for example, you are very representative of the FIS quote unquote branch. Are they just kind of like leaving you alone to that and just like let the process happen on their own? Or is there some sort of kind of supervision perhaps from them? Because with us, it's quite centralized. Coaches picked out and then like, me as the chief coordinator in position, then we kind of pick someone out to be responsible, and that person, upon agreeing, then they're bound by that obligation.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way it works for us is that ILMS is sort of, I don't know about the ILMS now because I'm not at campus anymore, but when I ran it together with Albertus from Jessup,
right.
ILMS was more administrative. So we deal with a lot of the administration with the faculty as opposed to being involved in the moot itself. So the moot in itself would be run by the alumni, usually would be run by the alumni. Unless there is no alumni, then of course they would be able to come to ILMS and say, you know what, we don't have a coach. Can you please assign us a coach? And then ILMS can appoint a coach. But That was during my year. And for new moots that are emerging, such as, for example, we did the IMSG moot in Singapore or the ICC mediation moot in Hong Kong. If there is no prior alumni who had actually participated in the event, then it would be like sort of, you know, cara Indonesia banget, musyawarah mufakat antara ilms nih gimana nih enaknya. And, you know, someone would always be like, you know what, I'll volunteer. And there's not much beef between us. And we always work together very well in between all of the moots, in between like all the different kind of moots. So that's how it's usually run, actually.
Right, and that works for you guys. It
yeah,
more or less smoothly.
Yeah, very
smoothly. Okay,
I haven't had a situation where I actually had to fight somebody on a coaching position, or yeah. So I guess for now it's been running quite smoothly, and everyone sees eye to eye.
That's interesting, especially as like someone kind of in the works right now. It's very different from the way we run things, but I suppose that just goes to show there's a number of ways you could do it, quote unquote, correctly, right?
Yeah.
But we did talk to Joy about how she was running the Jessup this year, and we'd also like to talk to you about how you ran the pre-moot in Indonesia this year. Could you talk to us a little bit about how organizing it went, and maybe a little bit about why you chose to do it?
Okay. First, I think I'm going to answer why I chose to do it. It's because there was no one else to do it.
Oh, right.
But, you know, that's fine for me because I enjoy running it, and I've been running it for the past 3 years.
You've also been there for a while.
Yeah, I've been there for a while, and like I sort of get the ins and outs and like how tough it is. But this year I was trying to step back a little bit and give, you know, the younger generation a chance to actually run it. That's why I was just supervising. I was just directing, whereas the hard work that was put in was actually, I'd like to give out a shout out to Salma Priyandani and Rafi Yuzer as the project officers, as well as my co-director, Rinita Ayunina. We ran it all together, and I would say the organization of it is way less complicated than it is with Jessup. Like, you know, we can just pick out, it's not randomly, but, you know, we can just, because it is viewed as a learning exercise instead of like a competition, like it's more of a practice round than an actual competition. Because if you don't make it in the national rounds, that's fine, right? Like you can still make it to, you can still go to the actual VIS. So it's more of a chilled, laid back version of a national round, so to speak. And so it's a lengthy process, but I guess we all had fun, and it was a great experience for everybody, especially in terms of like networking. So I think,
I mean, even I, as just like a random person who kind of showed up with my university's teams, I enjoyed it, and it was great networking for me as well.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
I think I have to mention a little bit, just because I don't think we've actually explained to our audience how the pre-moot really works. Only we've only brushed upon it briefly with Ardai. You know Ardai, right?
Yeah.
So can I try and explain it, and you can correct me if I get it wrong?
Go ahead.
So the way the national pre-moot is, essentially we get a couple of teams participating in the international rounds, regardless of if it's FIS East or FIS West, because the problem is the same. And then basically we have rounds in between them, where the arbitrators are basically former FIS participants from different universities. And usually it's hosted by one of the nicer law firms, obviously, one of the top tier law firms in Jakarta. And this year it was both AHAPE and HAHAPE, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Great. So it's one of the three moots, actually. I'm not sure about but the way we do it is we take the national pre-moot, and then we have we take the Kuala Lumpur pre-moot, and then we move on to the Hong Kong pre-moot for us. But I'm not sure how you guys do it, because you guys go to West, right?
Yeah, we go to West, and we go to a lot of pre-moots. So in the 23rd VIS that I, when I participated in 2016, we went to Düsseldorf in Germany, and then we went to Prague, we went to Budapest, and so we joined the Jakarta pre-moot, and then on top of that, there are 3 to 4 pre-moots, depending on the time that the kids can take off college to actually participate in these moots. But usually it's around 3 to 4.
That's a great way to segue into my next question, because especially at least in your example where you're kind of touring through Europe and you're doing all these pre-moots, obviously that's not cheap, and obviously that requires some financing. And my next question really is, in relation to that, how does Universitas Indonesia handle that? Is it the same with us in the way that you go sponsor hunting and you're kind of begging law firms for money? Well, quote unquote begging, obviously. But could you explain a little bit about if you've ever had problems with financing your moots?
Problems, not really. Challenges, yes.
Okay.
But I really want to highlight this since I have the chance and since you segued into this question. And I really wanted to highlight this for everybody listening to the podcast. A few weeks ago or last month-ish, there was this issue on Twitter, and it was sort of really big, where a guy tweeted that, quote, I wouldn't say quote unquote, but something along the lines of, you can only join.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You can only join a moot if you are privileged. If you are privileged and speak English, and if you have money. Well, let me be the first one to debunk that. We've had people inside moots with financial difficulties. You know, not everybody comes from a background where they have money, and that's just life.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the job of the team, the coaches, the alumni, and ILMs to make sure that that is not a hindrance to the person actually going to the moot, you know? And it can be achieved in many ways, you know? Of course, we do sponsor hunting to law firms. Our Dekanat actually sponsors us as well. Rektorat sponsors us as well. And we get all the academic support from our lecturers who, if we are going to a moot, they would be prone to say, oh, it's okay. You know what? I will give you alternative work to do for your grading. So there is a big support from the university. But of course, there are boundaries. For example, you have to keep your attendance at a certain percentage. But other than that, financial wise, there are challenges. You know, sometimes you don't get sponsors. Sometimes your sponsors come in late. Sometimes they are reimbursed, so you actually have to front the costs. But I guess a really important question would be to the team as well. Would you be able to take care of each other? Like, not just in terms of the work of a mootie, but as well as financially, in a sense. You know, if this one person can't pay, ya udah yang lain patungan dong. Because you're a team, you know? And I know it may not seem fair, but again, I think my focus as a coach is that I don't really look at your financial status. Like, if you are good, if you show willingness to actually participate in a moot, then I as a coach and as alumni, of course, we will do all our best. We will go heads over heels to actually fund you. And of course, funding is a two-way street in which for the team looks out for sponsors, but the coaches help as well, because the coaches know seniors who know other seniors. So it's a whole collaborative effort for you to actually bring the team to Vienna or bring the team to wherever you're mooting. But mostly sponsors and university help, actually, for finances.
I'm actually like so glad that's the way you answered it, and it's a really great answer. And I just want to add on that's truly that is our job, kind of as like former mooties, right? Obviously, now you've been working for as a lawyer almost a year. But even before then, obviously mooting since high school. It's no secret that mooting is a very demanding, quote unquote, hobby. And lawyering, I would say, is also kind of in the same way. It's a very demanding job, especially time-wise. But obviously, you're still out there. You're still, you managed to have a kind of balance, would you say? Would you say you have a good work-life balance?
I would say I have a pretty good work-life balance.
How would you say you manage that? How would you say that you can still pursue other hobbies? Because I know you have musical hobbies and all that.
Yeah.
Maybe you can plug your music after this, but how do you manage to juggle all that?
Well, I guess if you're asking me how does someone manage work-life balance, it really comes down to the point whether you actually have work-life balance or not, because you can't manage something you don't have. So it's really important that you choose and that you plan ahead before choosing to get into a mood or before you get into like your current work. If you can see that, all right, your work allows you this many hours of free time and you don't think that's good for you, then don't take that work. Like, don't do the job. For me, it is the work-life balance really is because we work very efficiently at our office. We work very, very swiftly. But how you manage it is actually, you got to really have a plan, you know. Like, for example, oh, you know what? I'm going to do this mood this year. You got to look at your classes because I can't re-emphasize this enough. At the end of the day, because you're an Indonesian qualified lawyer, your knowledge of Indonesian law must be up to par with your mooting knowledge. So you can talk about arbitration. You can talk about public international law. You can talk about the ICC or the SIAC. But at the end of the day, if you get into a firm which does not exclusively practice the field of law that your moot actually practiced, then you would still need a considerable amount of knowledge of Indonesian law. And therefore, I think the biggest balance is not between your free time and the moot, because the moot is actually a sacrifice of your free time, but it's actually between your studies and the moot. So you need to have enough or ample amount of time for your studies as well for the moot. And you have to view mooting as a hobby or as free time, so to speak, as time that you are spending to nurture yourself. Because if you don't view it as such, then you would get really tired really quickly. You would hate, for example, you could hate your team. You could hate all the memo writing and the pleading practice. So if you don't view it as something enjoyable, then I don't think mooting would be the right time for you to spend. Because at the end of the day, even though you have, for example, other commitments such as music or you have sports maybe, you got to be really able to plan out how much of everything takes your time out of your schedule. So you got to know, okay, for this, gua 6 jam sehari, contohnya latihan. Terus gua harus belajar sekian jam biar IPK gua kagak jeblok. And then after that, I have what? So I think you got to have an order of priorities.
Priority, yeah.
So your priority is what are you, and it's good to have, you know, an end goal. You got to know what you want to do at the end of the day. If it doesn't nurture you for what you're trying to achieve, then don't do it. That's right. How I would say it.
That's a great advice, actually. I don't think we've had a lot of guests who've had that orientation and especially prioritization towards how important that your studies are in balance with your mood. And obviously that isn't an idea that I very much endorse as the host and as the chief of IMCC. So yeah. Again, fantastic answer, Bang.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we are running out of time. So usually though, we always let our speakers have a last word to the audience. Do you have any short messages you'd like to throw out to anyone listening out there?
Short messages. Well, if you do something, do it with passion, because if you don't have passion, then you wouldn't be able to do it 100%, and then you'll be just wasting your time. So find whatever passion that is. It doesn't need to be mooting, it doesn't need to be law, but whatever you do wholeheartedly, 100%, chances are you will succeed. So most probably that's what I would like to leave off as.
And Bang Dio dropping quotes out here today, yeah. But we love to hear it. It's great, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're putting out like a lot of time. You know, you're very busy, and just thank you so much.
No, thank you, man. For having me.
Hopefully, we'll get to hang out to chat to speak sometime in the near future.
Sure.
And really, we just wish you all the best from the Moot Court Society here at UNPA to you.
Thank you very much.
And once again, thank you. We'll see when you see you, yeah?
All right. And again, guys, congrats on this year. You guys have pushed so many milestones. Again, a huge shout out to Moot Court Society UNPAD. You guys are really great. I loved what you guys achieved this year. So keep it up. And yeah,
means a lot.
See you guys soon.
Means a lot. Bye bye. For the audience, we're going to cut to the ending real quick. And see you soon, ya bang. Bye.
All right. Bye bye.
So that's it for today, everyone. Hopefully, Joy and Bang Dio's sharing of their experience was insightful for all of you listeners and was able to give you a perspective that is broader than just ours from the Moot Court Society at Unpad. Stay tuned for next week's episode, where we will be publishing a mini-episode on public international law and discussing the subjects under it as presented by Ms. Muti Aulia. Be sure to follow us on whatever platform you're listening to us on so you know when we publish new episodes. But until then, see you guys and may it please the court.